42. I just ran into some data a few days ago saying that each EU citizen on a yearly basis generate about 8 tons of carbon emission. But to reach the global warming limit, which is 2 degrees, we need to reduce that number to 1 ton of carbon emission per person per year. To fill this 7 ton of carbon emission gap, individuals, of course, we are end consumers, so we make our choice about how we live our life, what we consume. But on the other side, businesses, industries who provide everyone on a daily basis products and service has a big role to play to bridge the gap. But how do they do it? What are some means and to act, and how do we measure and set up the system? That is when I learned about the company Climate Partner, which is a label for products, carbon neutrality. I was really interested and curious to learn more. So I reached out to the company and got Simon, the CTO of Climate Partner, on the show. So welcome, Simon. And we are very excited to learn about how brands and companies can reach carbon neutral and make an impact on sustainability with the support of your company. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Tammy. Thanks for having me.
So why don't you give us a more detailed description about Climate Partner and what are you doing there?
Yeah, so maybe to show an example now for the listeners who can't see the video, this is maybe not the best thing, but I'm holding a Katja's gummy bear package into the camera, and it has a label up here. Well, it's German. It says Klimaneutral, which means carbon neutral. And it has our logo. And I think this gives you a good idea of what we're trying to achieve. So we want to help companies do climate action. And what can they do for that is calculate their emissions of their company or of their products, and then offset them and thus give money to carbon reduction projects all over the world, and thus do their contribution to the reduction of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And what we're trying to do is target retailers so that they provide and ask for their suppliers to produce carbon neutral products, and thus enable the customers, the end consumers, to have these choices when they buy something.
Mm-hmm. And your role as a CTO in a company?
Well, we're trying to automate a lot of this process. So you can imagine that there's a lot of data entry that we have to do, and then calculation and helping customers understand the data, enter it, and then also understand how they can reduce and avoid emissions, plus do all of the offsetting, the label generation, and then the tracking of what the customer has done, so what the company has done, so that consumers can actually see that. And there's a lot of automation, so that the software involved in that. And my main role is building a team and building that software to automate that, plus all of the technology, of course, so that the company can work.
Super, super. So now I understand Climate Partner has been in the market for some years. And among the roadmap, how many products and companies do you put your label on them?
Yes, and that is a very good question, which is probably one of the reasons why we are looking for people to help us with data, because we actually don't even know how many products are out there on the market that have our label. And we want to build a database of all of these products so that we know, but that we can also, you know, show to the world, these are all the carbon neutral products that you can already buy.
I was going to ask you, among the many products, maybe you can give us a concrete example. For example, yes. How does the process evolve? A company approach you and they want to reach carbon neutral, and then how do you examine each step of the process of their supply chain, and just a brief picture about the whole process?
Yeah, sorry, very good question there. So the products are wide range, actually. So I just showed you something from the food industry. Mm-hmm. But everything that you can buy in a store, of course, can have the label. But in general, everything else as well. So all the activity that companies do and everything that we do as humans almost, I mean, say commercial activity is in some way or another produces greenhouse gases. So whether it is that you eat gummy bears or a steak from a cow that is chewing grass and exhausting methane, or whether you drive around or just have, you know, sit in a building and work in a building that is heated, all of that consumes energy and thus normally creates greenhouse gas emissions. So there is a lot of opportunity, but also if you want, every company on the planet could be our customer. And the process of how we approach this is that the first step is always calculation, okay? And if you are an agency or, I don't know, a simpler business style, then you would normally have not so much data about the emissions. And this is separated into scopes. So the simpler ones are scope one and two. Scope one is the direct emissions of the company. So okay. If you have a car fleet, what does this exhaust? The heating for the houses, that is like the direct emissions of the company. Then there's what is called scope two, which is normally energy that you buy and the exhaust. So the emissions that are connected to that energy. Mm-hmm. And then there's scope three, and this is relevant when you actually produce goods. And there it becomes very complex, because then you would normally have suppliers that mm-hmm. deliver something to you, and then you need the data from the suppliers to actually understand what the emissions are and how goods are produced. So the first step is calculate the emissions either for the company or per product. Then the second step would be try and understand what is causing the main emissions and maybe make a strategy for avoiding and reducing them.
Sure.
And then offsetting, which is basically buying an equivalent amount of CO2 reduction certificates from a carbon protection project.
Mm-hmm. I have so many questions within these three processes. Let's start with the beginning, when you help with the calculation and the measurement, right? I'm sure there are certain products and service companies that are easier than the others. But taking my own personal example, I was involved in a project to measure the carbon footprint of a vegan cheese. And then at the cheese factory, producing the cheese is straightforward. They have their own plants they produce on site. So the emission here is, I guess, the electricity, water usage. But to trace back the original material to produce the cheese, they check the package they bought the cashew from. It's from Vietnam. And that is how we stopped this project, because we don't know at the cashew production farm, is that green label and what's the carbon footprint? It's hard to cross the continent and then to check that.
Yeah.
How do you tackle this kind of issue?
Yeah. So there are what you call emission factors, and also companies that provide these, and you can basically buy the data from them. And an emission factor would be, for example, for a kilogram of cashews, how much greenhouse gas, so that is carbon dioxide equivalent, normally is the unit that you measured in, how much of that is exhausted per unit of that product. And then you could also have one for, I don't know, you said, where did the cashews come from?
Vietnam.
And then maybe you have some from, I don't know, South America, and then you could compare be. Because they would also like contain the, I don't know, local differences, or maybe transport in the best case. So you can buy this data, but the question is often, is it available? So has anyone ever calculated the carbon footprint of a kilogram of cashew nuts? Is the data quality sufficient?
Absolutely.
And what we often do then is, if we can, we do calculate it ourselves, or trace it back, or rely on some studies, maybe, you know, scientific studies that have some, and then build our own database of these emission factors, because they're an important base for calculating the overall footprint.
Okay, so you actually just pull up any existing resources, examine them, or sometimes go yourself to establish these metrics?
Yes, so it's a mixture of both, and we try to get a high quality data. So often it's, you know, as it is normal in scientific work, the source is important. Then if you can't trace it back to the source, then you have to assume that it's just a guess and treat it that way.
Okay, Cool. And then that is in terms of food. What about a garment, a piece of clothing? And I know you also mentioned before you do carbon assessment for maybe a barber shop. How does that work?
Yes.
What do we count in?
Yeah. So I think one thing that you have to realize is that often there's sort of the Pareto principle in play where you can calculate the carbon footprint of whatever it is into the finest detail, but you might find out that for I don't know, let's take a liter of mineral water, maybe 90% of the emissions are due to the transport. So it doesn't actually matter. Is this gas mineral water? Is it not? Is it like, I don't know, heated in the process or whatever else? Because the transport is the main thing. And then maybe it's more important whether the container is glass or plastic, because that has like a weight difference. And once you figure that out, there's not much sense in investing too much into many details, but just say, okay, how can we actually reduce that main factor? So we are trying to find a good balance. That what we do is still, scientifically valid, but it doesn't cause too much overhead in calculating, and is still like possible to do for the actual company, because they also have their limits in understanding, what they're supplied with and where it comes from. So the example with the barbershop is that we try to calculate the footprints of single barbershops, and when you ask people, okay, like what is your energy consumption, they go, I don't know. And but how much is your electricity bill? Well, I don't know, I'd have to look that up. But if you say, or how big is the barbershop, and they don't even know that. And then if you ask them, okay, how many people are working there? Oh yeah, there are three per people working in there. And it turns out that by knowing the number of people that work in a given place, you can actually sort of very well estimate the energy consumption, and thus the overall footprint of the barbershop. Now, you have to be careful whether this is, close enough to what the protocols dictate in terms of how you calculate a carbon footprint. But we try to do these things so that we can, we can make reasonable calculation strategies.
Yep, and in the end, more scalable as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
What about the automation you're doing? How is it contributing to this process then?
Yeah. So we touched on the emission factors, and one thing that we're doing currently is building an emission factor database that is easy to use for the customer consultants who go through the calculation process with the companies, so that they can easily find the right emission factors. They can add some if they are missing, but maybe in the future also to enable customers themselves to say, I don't know, I'm building, what was it, a vegan cheese, and for that I'm using cashews from Vietnam, and would it make a difference if I bought, I don't know, South, I don't even know if cashews grow in South America, I'm just assuming something. Would it make a difference? And this is where a good emission factor database could already help you in, choosing a material that helps re you reduce your footprint. And then there are many things just around, managing customer data so that it's easier for our consultants to handle that, but also enable in a future customers to subscribe for our service so that they can self-register and then say, okay, calculate my own footprint. If it's simple enough, I already get maybe some suggestions for how to reduce this, maybe can compare to other companies that build, create similar products or provide similar services. And so I can see, am I on a good point in my journey? So there's really so much opportunity for improving and automating this process that I could
Totally.
probably go on talking about that.
Yeah, imagine the bag of chip you just showed at the beginning of the show. You have the number exact about the carbon footprint of the chip. Is it possible to go through the label and see what was the original carbon footprint and then how what projects are they using to offset this? How can we find
Yes.
that information?
Yes, exactly. So let me show that again. So there's a logo. It says Klima Neutral there, and below that it says this is a product. Okay, this is important because we have like these labels are guaranteed by us. So we there is like a definition of what this label means, and tries to create transparency what exactly this label means and what we guarantee for when we put this label on a product. And then below that, there is a link. There's also a version with a QR code so that the consumer can actually, you know, in the store, sees this label and says, okay, what does this really mean if it says carbon neutral? Go to our website and then he gets information. Who's the company? What is this product exactly? How much is the carbon footprint of that product? How many do they produce? And what projects have been given money to with the offsetting? Can get information on this product and can also then see what else is the company doing. So how are they trying to reduce that footprint? So it's not just about offsetting; they're actually trying to avoid their emissions as well. What else are they doing in the area of sustainability, for example? So the goal is really to create transparency for the consumer. Mm-hmm.
I think this is a very powerful process. In one end, if you do successfully build a database, you can compare across the industry and see what is the average carbon footprint and comparing at what is your scale and in which part can you really improve your operations. And then on the second side, when we're doing the carbon offset projects, I know you have many really cool, interesting projects going on. We'll touch up on them later. You are generating a lot of labor market income resources for people in different areas of the world. So why don't you introduce some of the carbon offset projects to us?
Yes. So I think the main category that we have is a so-called RED project. So this is basically protection of existing forests or of existing biomass. And often this is a question of, you know, forests degrade because of environmental issues or often are chopped down because people just need, you know, firewood or need the space to plant something else. And with often, you know, with a little financial effort, you can protect big forests and thus a lot of biomass that contains the carbon. And we have these in all of the, you know, the central parts of the world where, you know, big rainforests mainly grow, but also you can have them in Germany. Now, the difference is that when you're in Germany, for like a kilogram of or a ton of carbon, the investment is much higher than in other parts where you have huge extensions of forests. These are the main areas. Then there are many others that just provide people with alternative sources of often of electricity or of energy, so that they don't have to use firewood, because I think a large population of the world still, you know, cooks on firewood, basically. And so often this is used from chopping down forests or chopping down or, you know, burning biomass. And now, for example, one of my favorite projects is hydropower plant in Virunga National Park, which is in Congo. Mm-hmm. And this is an energy project, but it's not only producing, you know, green energy rather than having a coal plant, but it also enables people to cook on the electricity so they don't need the wood. And it gives work to people in the area. And also by protecting the plants from being chopped down, it protects the forest and thus also the wildlife you have in the forest. So this, you know, these things always come together, and that's then very nice to see and experience.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So there is a group of your company that is constantly contracting and initiating these kind of projects, I assume.
Yes, exactly. So far we've just been buying from these projects. Now we're getting more and more into developing them ourselves and participating in the development. And this is also a chance to say we can also, you know, steer them towards where customers want them, because it's also a very emotional thing, right? Do you want to protect forest somewhere, or do you prefer mangroves, or does it have to be in a specific region? So many customers ask us, okay, like I don't produce in Africa, I produce in Asia. Can I do some forest protection in Asia so that it is closer to my production site, for example? Mm-hmm. And then this having all sorts of different projects is it also gives you like an emotional connection, and also the information that you can give on, you know, people being helped by these projects and by the money that are put into them. It's also a very good information for people. It's not only about, you know, carbon tons. It's also about the actually improving the lives of the people and the animals in the areas.
Totally. And as you mentioned before, as in different area, there's different investment. For the same amount of carbon, you need to pay different prices.
Yeah.
And do you think there is a lot of need in the market at the moment for more projects and more investment? How big is the size?
Yeah.
Not sure if you have the answer.
No, I don't. So first of all, you have to distinguish between basically the, this is what we call the voluntary carbon market.
Mm-hmm.
So these projects and companies buying offsets is a voluntary process, as opposed to the carbon market that is regulated, for example, by the EU, where companies have to trade emission certificates, right?
Mm-hmm.
These are two different markets. Just until a few months ago, it was very easy and even cheap to buy big amounts of offsets from voluntary carbon projects.
Mm-hmm.
And now the demand for these projects has grown enormously, and thus also the prices have risen, and that is why we're trying to develop many more projects. I think the potential is really vast. So we have, as humans, we have eliminated so many forests and plants on the planet, mm-hmm. that the option or the possibility for reforestation is huge. And I guess to sort of avoid the worst aspects of a climate disaster, we have to do everything. And that includes reforesting as much of the planet as we can, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Clean energy, reforestation. I also see there are projects within ocean cleaning.
Yeah, so there are some side projects, if you want. So ocean cleaning, I think, does not directly contribute to carbon reduction in the atmosphere, but we often combine them. So we often say there is, I think the one you're referring to is called the, I don't remember the name, but plastic bank, I think is, mm-hmm. is one example, where yes. they collect sort of bottles out of the ocean and might even try to recycle them. And this is something that is often combined, where companies say, okay, I want, you know, my, I don't know, 10,000 tons of offset, but I would like to put some money into cleaning up the oceans, because it also contributes to making the world a better place, and sort of gives my employees, also the or customers and employees, the feeling that, you know, they're doing something extra.
Sure. And as I understand, this is also another contracting case of the project. And just, I want to put the black hat on now and ask you, there are just so many green labels now in the market. Why should people trust you, and how do you start building up this label even?
Yeah, I think you're totally right, and trust is the main component here. And that's why we are trying to have the URL of the website that you can go to, and the consumer can themselves see what we're doing, and that it's not only about offsetting, but it's really also about reduction. This is where we are also trying to put in some effort to improve this transparency.
Mm-hmm.
So we're defining what exactly does the label mean, what are we guaranteeing. We're trying to improve the calculation process so that it actually adheres to the standards and is it makes sense and it is scientifically valid. Plus, we're trying to create a lot of transparency around what the company is actually doing, what these projects do, and all of these things.
Mm-hmm. And are there any similar labels for carbon neutral green product in the market? And how are you different?
Yes, so I think there are a lot of labels. So I think the space is, the business itself is growing so much, so the overall market is growing so much, that there's a lot of companies, also new companies, existing companies. The specialty of Climate Partner is, I think, we cover the whole process for companies that want to do climate action, and especially with, you know, carbon neutral products or services, where we can do the calculation very well, support it with automation and all of the offsetting around that. Plus, we can guide the customer along all of that. So our basically customer consultants are highly skilled in finding what is the right data, helping that input it, and also what are the right projects that they want to use, plus defining a strategy and how, like a reduction strategy and how to follow up in this, can do workshops around this. So we sort of cover the whole process there.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a full package. Does it mean it's also more expensive if a company wanna really work with you? I guess it depends on the scope of the project, but what is the investment they need to expect from this?
Well, yeah, this really depends on the on what the company does. So for smaller companies who just want, you know, their carbon footprint, I think a few hundred euros is sort of the initial investment that they have to do to get the footprint. And then, of course, this depends on the actual footprint, and the offsetting then is really a question of how big is the amount and what projects do you choose. And of course, it's more expensive than saying, I just buy offset certificates, like maybe in a big amount, because of course, the bigger the offset amount, the lower the price. But our added value is exactly in helping the customer understand the whole process.
Understand and reduce, and not only offset.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Cool. Now I want to shift the gear more toward the scope of data. We mentioned briefly before you are discovering the potential value that having a data structure team can bring to your company. And one of the ideas why it's going to be useful is to construct this database of all the projects, the carbon emission standards. What are some other areas where you are thinking about shifting more toward data and more analytical, and how can that help you?
Yeah, so I think the main area is really all the data that we collect, mm-hmm. as you said, around products and emissions, and also production processes, and maybe, you know, supply chains. What are things that go into producing something? And this is where both for understanding our own business, mm-hmm. but also helping the customers understanding theirs and their emissions can help a lot. And it can also improve our product in the sense that it gets more intelligent, right? So you can then use that to sort of model data input in general and previous production processes, and also get insights into what do customers actually do with our products.
Okay, cool. And during now your day-to-day work, or even at the company scale, what is your biggest challenge?
What is our biggest challenge? So currently, I think in terms of company, the biggest challenge is we are growing a lot because the market is growing, and a lot of companies are discovering that they can actually do something, and that the, you know, consumers want them to and want to buy these products. And this for us means a big growth, and thus the main challenge is, where do we find the right people? How we transport the culture? How do we build up the organization, and how do we spread to more areas of business and other countries?
Mm-hmm. Cool. I want to comment on that, because when I was asking Simon to introduce some resources to share with the audience, one of the resources he put in the document is actually his Goodreads. And out of curiosity, I went to check the list of books you're reading. I actually do find a lot of overlapping books that we share. One of them is Extreme Ownership and Think Again. So I do see you read a lot of books on recruiting talents and building teams. What are some of your learnings out of all these books?
Wow, I mean, there are so many things. I think what I'm really most fascinated by are basic psychology books. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, Daniel Kahneman, where psychologists describe the scientific research on how the human brain works and what is the what does that mean for our day-to-day decisions. And then you discover that you know, your brain works in a certain way that makes you think in a certain way. And for example, Daniel Kahneman has this idea of describing slow thinking and fast thinking. So you would react instinctively, and then often your rational brain follows that instinct and gives reasons for why this instinct is correct.
Mm-hmm.
And this is relevant in so many business day-to-day decisions also. You hire someone, maybe not because you're convinced of their skills or their potential, but because they're, you know, there's just a connection, and then your brain tries to find all the reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the things, you know, these basic psychological workings that I've taken out of books and are trying to apply, if you want, for my daily
system
work.
A and system B.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Cool. And is there anything else we didn't touch upon that you would like to share?
So you I think your podcast is mostly about data and all of its aspects. Yeah. So maybe this, and I don't have a background in actual, you know, data engineering and data science, but it is a very relevant topic for us. And I see that in general, like in the industry, the ideas and also the people who study like data science and machine learning, all of these things is growing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still hard to find people with experience. So that is certainly a challenge for us, finding the people, but also understanding how do you organize the data? How do you, you know, there are technical aspects, what technologies do you use? And then this idea of, do you all throw it into a big data lake, or is it a data warehouse old warehouse, style, yeah. or is it a mm-hmm. data mesh where every team is responsible for their single data things? This is a big challenge in terms of data. And then what are the right tools to understand and analyze all this data? And also here, we're trying to, you know, to understand what are industry best practices and how do you find people who have knowledge around that? It's a new area, one that I think will have a huge potential for improving our future, you know, products, but also the way we can help our customers.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I guess, you know, this is probably valid in some ways valid for every business, because everything is going towards more artificial intelligence. But with all of the data that we collect on emissions and production, this is really an important aspect for us.
Mm-hmm. Super. It seems that there is a huge playground for data expertise professionals to join Climate Partner Force.
Absolutely, yeah.
So call for the audience. If anyone who are listening to this podcast had some relevant experience, they can reach out to you, I assume, or the HR of Climate
yes,
Partner. With that being said, what is the best way for our audience to contact you if they want to continue further discussion?
Well, I guess the website is always a good point of entry. You can read up more about what Climate Partner is doing and what areas of, you know, expertise we're looking for. Also, you know, contact me on LinkedIn. We can put that into the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I guess my email address is fairly easy to guess if you have my name.
Uh-huh. Cool. I just want to have one bonus question, because I forgot to ask. Because in your bio, you mentioned you believe continuous learning and naming things well is difficult, but important.
Yep.
Can you further illustrate on that? Continuous learning, yes, but the naming things well is difficult, but important.
Yes. In German, there is... we say Namens in Schall und Rauch, which means names are nothing but, what do you say, noise and fume, I guess, noise and mm-hmm. smoke. So, you know, names are nothing because it is the code that counts, not, you know, how the code works, not what you put in the code, for example, if you think about software development. I believe, though, that what you call things already establishes how you think about them, and also what you call you know, parts of your system, for example, what do they mean for you internally, and what also how do you sell them to the customer is very important, because a name is the first imprint that you have of when you talk about a person also or something. So I'm the one who's the naming nerd, and for example, what we now call the footprint calculator, before was called the enterprise tool or something like that. And I said, this doesn't say what this thing does. It has a purpose. Let's name it after the purpose. And that's why we now call it footprint calculator.
Mm-hmm. Because I can only relate in the sense of programming in data. When you do create a new function, you always need to name your variables. And for at least at the beginning, I always get confused about what I name things. And I do confirm it's very important.
Yes, there you go.
Cool. So thank you very much, Simon. I'm very happy to take a whole tour with you from the concept of carbon emission footprint down the supply chain of a business, how they size, reduce, and offset their carbon footprint, and end up with this very philosophical note about naming things right, and then the systematic thinking, fast and slow thinking. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Tammy. These were excellent questions and also very varied across the whole field that Climate Partner and I cover.
Super. And this is episode 42, Data for Future. We'll see you in the next episode.